Welcome to the Enneagram of Personality and the Four Doorways to Conscious Living, Episode 53 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owygon. Today I am speaking with Indra Rinsler, a lifetime spiritual seeker who will share a valuable tool for increasing our self-awareness and our understanding about others. The Enneagram of Personality. We're also going to talk about the four doorways to conscious living. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Serge Mazarin. Conscious living allows us to become the composers and conductors of our own lives. Indra Rinsler is a healer and teacher and offers life readings for clients. Astrology and the Enneagram of Personality are the main modalities that he shares. He's been studying astrology and spirituality for 50 years. He first learned of the Enneagram of Personality in 1999. He uses these two modalities individually and in combination. His focus is to help clients to awaken to who they really are. He works to help people to live beyond their conditioned stories and live more in the moment. Indra, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You work with something called the Enneagram of Personality. Can you tell our listeners what that is and how can it help people in their personal growth?
The Enneagram of Personality is a modality about 60 years old, and it's, on the simplest of levels, it's a personality typing system. And it's an incredible psychological tool. It helps us to have better relationships and helps us to know each other, to have more compassion for each other. But on the deepest of levels, it's an ultimate spiritual tool because it helps us to come into the moment in order to let go of our triggers. Enneagram, it's a Greek word that means nine-sided figure. And so these are the nine personality types. These are the archetypes that I believe that explain the 2,000 to 5,000-year-old Judeo-Christian tradition and all of the conditioning and all of the behavior things that have been passed down to us. The Enneagram of Personality has the ability to make it disappear because in understanding our core story, one of the 9 points is who we think we are. It's the story at our core of our personality.
So much of what you said ties into the next question that I want to ask you, and that is, how can people use the information they learn from the Enneagram of Personality to help them in their interpersonal relationships and communication, especially as it pertains to conflict prevention or conflict transformation?
Well, the point is that in understanding this personality that we take on, there's an incredible amount of patterning. And so we have names for the 9 types. We also use the numbers. There's no hierarchy. So a 1 is the perfectionist. They feel not capable within themselves. They feel inadequate. And so they need everything around them to be perfect. But they're making this story up of what's perfect. It's changeable day to day because they're making it up. And so it's a little bit like a little kid. If a little kid does something, and you can kind of say they do something that isn't appropriate, then you say, oh, well, they're a little kid. They don't really understand. And so when you understand that people are coming from their behavior patterns, then we can give them more compassion. We can give ourselves more compassion. And so rather than being 3 inches apart, you did this, you did this, I did this, you did this, we can kind of pull back and say, it's just patterning happening. And you don't take it so personal because it isn't meant to be personal because the patterning happens with everybody. A person will do their patterning with everybody. And so why get into a conflict on things that people can't control until they understand? As you study the Enneagram of Personality, then you understand yourself better, and then you're able to let go of these behavior patterns that don't serve us.
And how wonderful is that, to be able to let go of patterns that don't serve us? And you also mentioned earlier how the Enneagram helps people understand and release their triggers. Does that tie into the patterns that you're talking about? Are the triggers part of those patterns? And then the second part of the question is, how does the Enneagram help people release their triggers?
It helps you release it by exposing it. It doesn't do anything other than that. the patterning, the triggers for the one is the feeling of inadequacy. And so then everything needs to be done right. And the two is the helper. And so everything is, they're looking for the love that they don't feel that they are worthy of. And so they help other people in order for them to then love them because they don't feel worthy of love within themselves. Until you release it, it's how you interact with the world. And these patternings are deep. They're ingrained. They're at birth. I can see them in astrology charts. I'm also an astrologer, and I can see them in people's astrology charts. And how you let go of it is by becoming aware of it. It's like any kind of personal growth. As we understand our patternings and behaviors and the way that people feel us and see us, then we adapt and change the way that we behave.
So much of what you're talking about makes me think of mindfulness. It sounds as though what you're saying is that we are bringing awareness into our patterns and how we show up in the world. And then through that awareness, we can then become mindful of whether or not how we're showing up is useful. And if we decide that it is not as useful as we wish it were, then we could change that pattern through that awareness and that mindfulness. Is that correct?
That would be correct. I call it minding, you know, rather than being mindful, trying to be minding, keeping awareness of what the patterns are. But the Enneagram gives us a breakdown of our behavior patterns without knowing anybody. As soon as I know their Enneagram, I can tell so much about them without putting them in a box. We can outgrow them. We can learn to hide them better. We can only have them come up in certain situations, and we definitely can grow with them. But at the core, you know, like Ram Dass said, if you want to be tested, go see your family. And so when you're ultimately tested, we're going to go back to these behavior patterns, no matter how enlightened we are. I mean, unless we are completely enlightened, and then they're completely gone.
I often teach about conscious communication and living with awareness and what I call mindfulness. So I'm very intrigued about the four doorways to conscious living. What are the four doorways to conscious living?
The life reading that I offer people is 3 hours. And at the end of the reading, people would say, okay, great. Now what do I do with this information? And so what appeared was the four doorways. So the first one is to learn to observe. And so the idea is that we need to watch what we're thinking. We need to watch how we behave. We need to watch how we react to what other people say and how they behave. And the second doorway is to let go and release what doesn't serve us. I like to read this little paragraph here. This is from a book called Letting Go by David Hawkins that I really recommend. Letting go involves being aware of a feeling, letting it come up, staying with it, and letting it run its course without wanting to make it different or do anything about it. It means simply to let the feeling be there and to focus on letting out the energy behind it. When letting go, ignore all thoughts. The third doorway then is loving ourselves. And then the fourth is living in the moment. And so if we're living in the moment, then we have to love ourselves. There is no other choice. And if we're not loving ourselves, then we're not in the moment. So how do we love ourselves? Then we go back to the second doorway, is to let go and release whatever doesn't serve us. And this, we spend a long time on this process of letting go and releasing. And so how do we know what to let go and release? Well, we just observe.
So much of what you're talking about right now, Indra, ties into a lot of what I teach and talk about with regard to conflict transformation. I talk a lot about going into the neutral observer mode, where we step outside of ourselves and look at ourselves without judgment or assessment or any kind of condemnation, but simply saying, oh, look at that, there it is. Then that let go and release of what doesn't work, that's so important in relationships that have a lot of friction and a lot of attachment to past harms and hurts, which ties into that fourth door of living in the moment. And then that loving self is so much a part of showing up in a relationship in a way where if we love ourselves, then we are better able to accept and embrace others from my perspective. And so I really like everything that you're saying about the four doorways to conscious living. It makes a lot of sense and seems like it could really help people co-create better relationships with one another.
Absolutely. I do want to say it's not about what doesn't work. I like to use the phrase what doesn't serve, because what doesn't work can be up to opinion. Where does it serve you or does it not serve you? That's an inward decision that you have to make. I think that's a better place to make it, because it may be that it doesn't work, but it does serve you until you're ready to let go of something.
I completely agree with you on that. And very often I use doesn't serve as well, especially when I'm in mediation with people, because that doesn't work. Also, as I'm thinking about it and hearing what you just said, feels like it has a little bit more judgment to it. And again, that neutral observation of what's happening makes it easier for us to assess what serves and doesn't serve and what we want to change based on that. So I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. And so based on your frame of reference and your skills and your wisdom, what advice do you have for our listeners for how they might strengthen and improve their relationships, especially the relationships that are difficult for them?
Well, I think that they should appreciate those difficult relationships, because the point of relationship is to mirror our own behavior. And if you've got difficulties with people, then they're your teacher. I had a client recently who said, I have a difficult mother. I said, she's your guru. And my son, I have difficulties with my son. Is he my guru too? Yes, he's your guru too. So while they're difficult, the fact is that these are the mirrors that enable us to grow. And without those, we stop growing and we, in a sense, are not alive.
I resonate so much with what you're saying, Indra. One of my spiritual teachers taught me that everyone we encounter is our teacher if we choose to let them be that. And if we pay close attention to every encounter, every interaction, and most especially those that are significant and powerful in our lives, we will then recognize that here is my teacher and I have opportunities to learn something here. Pay attention. My teacher also said that those with whom we have friction and conflict are actually our greatest teachers, and we might want to consider them as our Buddha makers. So similar to what you're saying as our guru, he says, this person has the opportunity to make you a Buddha, because you will need to learn to transcend this friction and appreciate what is the wisdom here that I'm supposed to gain from this experience with this person.
Absolutely. And whether you take them on as your teacher or not, they're still your teacher. You don't have to be aware of it in order for them to be your teacher.
That's true. Although I will say that if we are aware of it, then we have even more opportunity to learn, because we're paying closer attention to what is the opportunity to grow and learn here. You know, if somebody were to say, what is the meaning of life? I would say the meaning of life is to evolve. And if they were to say, what is the meaning of relationship? I would say the meaning of relationship is to give us the tools and understandings with which to evolve, and not just the positive relationships and not just relationships with teachers like yourself, but relationships that are difficult for us and filled with friction and conflict. That's a powerful relationship and an opportunity to learn powerful wisdoms and to evolve in an even greater way.
So much of life is counterintuitive. We think that the difficult relationships are the problem. And the counterintuitive is the fact that the relationships that are easy, quote unquote easy, there's not much growth there. And so we stagnate in those situations, which isn't to say that we need to go looking for a difficult relationship, because it will find us. We don't really need to go looking. True. At the right time, it will find us.
That's so true. When you talk about the easy relationships not really giving us that chance to develop, it makes me think about that often I think of difficult relationships as a psychological or spiritual workout, and that we may get sore from that experience of pushing and pushing back and so forth. But as a result, we also can become stronger and even healthier, just as our body becomes stronger and healthier when we work out. But again, it depends on, I think, and this is what you're saying too, is it depends on how we approach it, because we can injure ourselves in a workout too. And we can injure ourselves if we put too much force into a difficult relationship, but rather if we work with it, dance with it, move with it, then we can begin to evolve. Would you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts?
I'd like to use the word tested rather than workout. I had a teacher that words are so important, the actual words we use. So I like the word that it's a test rather than making it a workout, okay. You know, that we get tested. Sometimes when we get tested, we react well, and sometimes we don't. We lost power where I live here in California. We lost power for 6.5 days. We had sort of a really unique snowstorm in our area. And the last people just got power back 14, 16 days. And I mean, everybody was tested, you know, nobody had their propane tanks filled up. We had to clear the roads. We had trees down everywhere. It was an amazing experience when you have a childlike attitude and you say, wow, look what nature did. You know, the oak trees got pulled over. They were so thirsty that they got heavy with all the water they drank and they dropped on houses and cars and roads. It was really an amazing experience. Or you could say, what a bummer, and I'm scared, and it's terrible, and I lost this, and I lost that, and yada, yada, yada. That's all your attitude on how you're going to cope with it. And you may cope with it well for 15 minutes and then lose it. And you may last for a day or you may last for the first week before you lose it. And there's no right or wrong in any of that. There's no good or bad in any of that. It's just your particular level. But I expect the people around here will make a notation that they need to be more prepared.
I'm smiling so big as I'm listening to you, Indra, because I was actually on my way to spend Christmas with my family in San Jose and got trapped in that very snowstorm that you're talking about for a week and was unable to be with my family and all of that. So my podcast at the end of 2021 was called An Attitude of Gratitude. Yeah. And I talked about my experience in being trapped in that very same snowstorm and how I could have let it ruin my holidays, or I could be so very thankful that I was warm and safe and dry, and that so many other people weren't during that time. And so I love that you're talking about your experience of that very same snowstorm. It's a little bit serendipitous. I completely agree with you about how important it is for us to reframe how we look at our experiences in order to learn the most from them. And if we spend all of our time bemoaning our trials and tribulations and, oh, how horrible this is, we don't have an opportunity to see what the blessings are in that situation. And as you pointed out at the end of what you were just saying, the opportunity to learn the lessons from that. One of the lessons I learned from my experience with that snowstorm is that I will never again try to drive out of Oregon in the wintertime, because there is no way to do it without going through a mountain pass that very likely will make me snowbound. If we don't reframe our perspective to what are the blessings here as opposed to what are the curses here, then we don't have the opportunity to learn and grow as much from those challenging experiences. And I also wanted to acknowledge what you said a few minutes ago, Indra, about how important our choice of words is. And I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I'm delighted to know that there are teachers out there who teach how important that is, because that's also a big part of what I talk about, is that conscious communication and the power of the words that we choose on us and the power that it has in its impact on others. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I'm wondering, is there more that you would like to share in terms of that piece about conscious communication and how we choose our vocabulary?
I do want to say, in relation to what you said, is that I think this is the point of life, is that we get into these sticky situations that we can bemoan the density of the physical plane. But the fact is that it is a unique teacher. I like to say it's so obvious, even I got it. And the obviousness of our situations, like in telepathy, you can just wish yourself over the mountain. But in physical plane, you can't do that. And that is the teacher. That's why we come down here, because there are unique lessons. And I think that's the point. I think that the sunsets are beautiful and the taste of a papaya is exquisite, but I'm not sure that that's the point of life. I think that's a side benefit. The point of it is that you get stuck, and how do you react? That's the teacher. And around vocabulary, the vocabulary is really important because it manifests. We manifest from the words that we use and the expressions we say. And if we say, I hate you or I love you, then it has a vibration. And if we say, I love you, and it's not true, then that's a vibration that another person picks up. Yeah, there's so much with the vocabulary. It's really important to be as accurate as possible. When people are really good at words, I really love that. I can feel the essence of it immediately, but to put it into words has taken a lifetime.
So many growth experiences take a lifetime, or perhaps two or three, I think. I really appreciate what you were saying about the power of words, and especially words like hate. And also when you talked about the inauthenticity in which we sometimes speak. And I know when I hear one of my coaching clients say, I hate myself, I personally feel this sort of physical shudder because of the energy that they just gave themselves by saying that. I always invite them to separate out what it is that they are so uncomfortable with and find another way to describe that discomfort rather than hate, and to separate that from themselves, to recognize that what they're talking about is an experience that they're having, not that it is them. And so one can say, if they have to use the word hate, they could say, I hate this experience. I'd rather they use a different word, as you're pointing out.
Yeah.
But to say, I hate myself, always feels to me like they are putting dark daggers of energy into their own field, into their own beingness. And that always unsettles me a great deal.
Yeah, there was a question that a podcaster sent. The question was, what would you change in the school system? And I think this is one of the things that I would change in the school system, is not only learning how to spell and how to write. I think that the power of the words that we use, and to trying to be more accurate in the words that we're using, and that I hate myself has been growing within this person for probably as long as they're alive. And nobody's corrected that energy. But you're right, it is a dagger to their own heart. And not really accurate, most likely.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Because what they're really saying is that there is something about their life that they're very unhappy with.
Yeah, I was going to say that what they're really saying is that the other person makes me feel uncomfortable about things about myself.
Perhaps so. I mean, I think they could be saying any number of things when they say that, but they usually, I don't believe, are actually meaning those specific words. I hate myself. And I just want to applaud what you said about adding communication awareness and communication skills to our educational system. That is so very, very important. I think the two most important things that we could add or improve in our educational system is communication and negotiation, because people don't realize that there is so much that could be negotiated. If only our world leaders understood mediation and negotiation, there could be so many soldiers who are dead today that could be alive today, from my perspective. And so if we start teaching our children how to communicate their truth in words that represent their truth and negotiate with others to co-create a better reality with them, I think we would evolve so much more quickly as a species, perhaps. Certainly there would be less suffering in the world. And I know that sometimes suffering is our teacher. And yet I also wonder if sometimes it goes beyond that into unnecessarily destructive places.
Well, I think our world leaders understand that, but the world leaders are not the ones in charge.
Oh boy, there goes a whole nother conversation. Indra, thank you so much for everything that you've shared. There's so much more that I want to talk with you about. I very much want to invite you back and have you talk some more about some of the things that you've shared with us that we haven't had a chance to expand upon. In the meantime, how can our listeners contact you or learn more about you and your work?
I have a website, indrarinsler.com, and it shares a lot of the modalities, the work that I do. I offer life readings. The life reading contains three different modalities, the Enneagram, which are the core triggers. I do Vedic astrology, the astrology of India, and we go through the strengths and weaknesses of the charts. There's no good or bad. There's no right or wrong, but it's your particular combination of configurations that I want to help people to understand themselves better. And then the third modality is the Wheel of Totality. This is the blind spots or places of ignorance. And so these life readings I offer, you can contact me through my Gmail, indrarinsler@gmail.com. You can check the website. I'm also on Facebook under Indra Rinsler. I do a lot of posting in there. I like to make an offer on the podcast, a free offer to people. If they want to write me, I can send them the Enneagram of Personality test in about 5 or 10 minutes. Most of you can figure out your personality number in relation to the Enneagram. And if you send me your birth date, time, and place, I'll send you your Vedic astrology chart with a little bit of an explanation of how to read it.
That's very generous of you, Indra. Thank you so much. And thank you again for the time that you've spent with us today. And I look forward to our next conversation, and I know our listeners will as well.
Thank you.
That's www.indrarinzler.com or email him at indrarinzler@gmail.com. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. I look forward to hearing from you with your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.